This is your Polycast for Friday, September 23rd, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Democrats target the state Senate Republican leader for defeat, and there are still more questions than answers on the St. Cloud attack. Early voting starts today in Minnesota. Mark Zedeklik reports.
This is the first presidential election that Minnesotans will be allowed to cast no-excuses absentee ballots. Secretary of State Steve Simon says early voting is more convenient and could help cut down on long election day lines.
It helps everybody. It's less hassle for the voter, and it's less hassle for the election judge, and it's less hassle for the elections administrator. So I do predict that over time, we're going to get to that metering out sort of situation, and it will take considerable pressure off of Election Day.
In addition to early no-excuses absentee voting, Simon says in most areas of the state, voters will be able to fill out ballots at elections headquarters and feed them into voting machines just as they would on Election Day, starting 1 week before the November 8th election. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota Senate Minority Leader David Hahn has high hopes of guiding Republicans to a majority in November's election. But Democrats who want to hold on to control say Hahn had better worry about his own reelection. They say he's out of sync with his suburban district on light rail transit and other issues. Brian Baxt went to Eden Prairie for a closer look.
David Hahn says he doesn't sense a real threat in his bid for a fifth Senate term. But he's devoting plenty of effort to his race anyway.
I have never taken any election for granted. Every election, I think I've worked harder than the last, and that's certainly going to be the case this year, too.
Hahn's Democratic opponent is Steve Swadzinski, a recently retired high school civics teacher.
Most people call me Swad.
He knows he has his hands full in his first campaign for public office, taking on a legislative caucus leader.
It's a David and Goliath battle.
That battle is playing out mostly in the mailboxes and on the doorsteps across Eden Prairie and the small sections of Minnetonka and Hopkins that make up the Republican-leaning district. As the leaves come down, the lawn signs are going up, and the rivals are making the rounds. On a recent afternoon, Hahn went from one house to the next with a stack of postcards that list his priorities as improving education, overhauling the MnSure health insurance exchange, and lowering taxes. Most people weren't home, but Hahn encountered Glenn Fearson, who says he voted for Hahn before and will again. He urges Hahn to do something to lower the cost of vehicle registration. Then Hahn feels Fearson out on the disputed light rail line that would start in downtown Minneapolis and end in Eden Prairie.
I'd like it, but when I'd support it.
Okay.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. What's your position on it?
Well, I'm trying to get him to have a hearing on it in the legislature. I've got just concerns about how much it's going to cost and how much
right.
the property taxes are going to be affected by it. So I think there are some questions that I'd like to know before I sign up for it. So I've been kind of skeptical about the cost-benefit trade-off.
Hahn says he's a believer in public transit, as long as it makes economic sense and provides enough flexibility to commuters.
There's never been a vote. I've never voted for or against Southwest Light Rail.
Swadzinski supports the project and argues Hahn's reluctance to fully back Southwest speaks to something larger.
I think Senator Hahn's done a great job representing his caucus as Republican minority leader, but I think he's dropped the ball on representing his constituents.
Swadzinski moved into the district within the past year from nearby Chanhassen. Hahn stresses that he's lived in Eden Prairie for 33 years and served 8 of those on the school board before he ran for the legislature. But Swadzinski has a different kind of local connection. He taught for 3 decades at Eden Prairie High School. Hahn says his own son took Swadzinski's American Government course.
My sense is he was a good teacher and that he had a lot of kids that liked him, and he also had some kids that really didn't like him.
Before retiring this summer, Swadzinski figures he taught 12,000 students, some of whom have helped him campaign. I strolled around a neighborhood not far from the high school and came across Wendy Campbell, who says 4 of her sons were in Swadzinski's classes. She's a fan of his and intends to vote for him.
We need more people who are willing to at least listen and compromise. If we don't compromise, we're not going to get things done. And I think Steve can compromise.
If Hahn is defeated, it would be only the 4th time in more than a century that the leader of a legislative caucus was ousted by voters. That's according to research by NPR News and the Legislative Reference Library. The last one was DFL Senate Majority Leader Dean Johnson, who lost in his 2006 campaign. Johnson says at first he saw the spirited challenge as an attempt to distract him from helping other Democrats campaign, until a late barrage from Republicans and their allies spelled his doom.
I think they wanted to occupy my time, made sure that I spent most of my time in Willmar, Minnesota, as opposed to Faribault County or Alexandria or other places where we had competitive races, no doubt about it. But then they smelled the defeat.
Johnson's advice? Don't neglect the home front. Hahn insists he won't be caught off guard and stands ready to counter any attacks. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News, Eden Prairie.
Minnesotans are still cleaning up flooded roads and basements in several areas of the state that were hammered by heavy rain. Trained weather observers reported 6 and 7 inch rain totals from Maple Grove to Waseca. But the storms just missed the threshold state climatologists use to track what they call mega rain events. As Elizabeth Dunbar reports, Minnesota has had two of those this year already.
Extreme Northern Fridley, 7.65.
Yeah.
Right?
The state climatology office is buzzing on a morning like this after a night of heavy rain. Climatologist Kenny Blumenfeld is trying to sort through the data to get a sense of what happened.
The Waseca airport gauge reported over 4 inches in an hour, and that's exceptional.
He and climatologist Pete Boulay don't trust that figure, which came from an automated gauge.
It's possible, but I think one of the things we'd like to see is, what did the humans observe?
Believe it or not, old-fashioned metal cylinders that have been used for decades to measure rainfall are still the go-to technology. They're better than an automated gauge and better than radar. Luckily, Minnesota has a robust network of observers who are trained to take rain measurements.
Pete Belay calling from the State Climatology Office. I was curious how much rain you folks got overnight there.
Boulay often gets on the phone to collect data, which he then turns into maps showing which areas received the most rain.
7.64, and that's in addition to the 2.5 you got yesterday. Wow.
It doesn't take long for Blumenfeld and Boulay to determine this wasn't a mega storm event. They would have needed to see 6 inches or more rain in 24 hours throughout a 1,000-square-mile area. That's about 2 average-sized Minnesota counties. And within that region, they'd have to see some areas measuring 8 inches. Blumenfeld says Minnesota got really good at measuring these storms in the early 1970s when a large and dense network of observers was first established. Since then, Minnesota has seen 10 mega events, and 7 of them have happened in the past 15 years, including 2 this year.
In some cases, a mega rainfall would be caused by a gigantic, slow-moving thunderstorm cell. More frequently, what we see is a thunderstorm complex, or a number of individual thunderstorm cells that repeatedly affect the same area.
Minnesota just had one of the wettest summers in history, and Blumenfeld says most of the moisture came from bigger storms.
In that way, this summer resembles what we think of when we think of our changing climate, even if it's actually in response to something else.
It's tough to tease out a climate change trend just from one season. These things are complicated.
There is a lot of what we call noise or chaos inherent in the system.
Peter Snyder is a University of Minnesota climate scientist. His team has researched the low-level jet stream, the ribbon of air that brings moisture to Minnesota from the Gulf of Mexico. Lately, August and September have been dry, making him wonder if this year's late summer heavy rains were anomalies rather than a sign of what's to come. Still, he says climate change could be influencing those flooded streets and basements in another way. In a warming climate, the atmosphere has the capacity to be wetter.
Maybe the setup wasn't climate change, but maybe the moisture capacity and the energy capacity of the atmosphere was greater because of climate change. And so the same setup 30 years ago versus now is going to produce more rainfall now.
University of Minnesota Extension climatologist Mark Seeley says the increased frequency of mega rains is disturbing. He says no one would have predicted the state would see 2, almost 3 mega storms this year.
I was shocked, and I don't know when it's going to abate, to be honest with you.
With 3 months left in the year, 2016 is a shoo-in for the wettest year ever in the 100-year history of Waseca's weather station. These wet couple of days made it just 2 inches shy of shattering the annual record. Reporting on the environment, Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
It's been nearly a week since 10 people were injured and an attacker with a knife was shot to death at the Crossroads Center Mall in St. Cloud. Witnesses and authorities described a chaotic scene, but friends have a hard time squaring the attack with the man they knew. Peter Cox reports.
Mubarak Ibrahim, a friend of Dahir Adin since the 7th grade, says what happened didn't match up with the person he knew.
It's just shocking, you know? And, I just want to say that we don't know his intentions. We don't know what could have caused it, what could have aggravated it. It could have been personal. It could have been any number of things could have been. And we shouldn't jump to conclusions. That's all I'm saying.
Here's what we know about Adin. He worked part-time as a security officer, a job he left in June. He had no criminal history. He was a product of the St. Cloud Public Schools. He was a student at St. Cloud State University through last spring, hoping to major in information systems. Investigators are trying to find out what led to the attack, but they've said very little publicly. There's at least one video that officials say shows Adin being shot by Jason Falconer, an off-duty Avon police officer. But that video and any others from the mall have not been released. Authorities have not released an autopsy report. They haven't given a detailed description of the weapon, nor have they given a clear timeline of how the incident unfolded. The FBI says it's investigating the attack as, quote, a potential act of terrorism. Adin's family spoke once through their attorney earlier in the week. Here's Abdul Wahid Osman.
As we mourn the death of our son, Dahir Adin, who was very dear to us, we are in deep shock, as everyone else is in the state of Minnesota.
They offered sympathy and condolences to the victims and said they are praying for their swift and full recovery. They also asked people not to rush to judgment or conclusions. Many are condemning the violent attack, but with little information, most can't understand why it happened. Adin's friends, including Mubarak Ibrahim, fear his actions will be painted with a familiar broad brush, that a Somali kid committing a crime is immediately labeled a terrorist. Ibrahim says he first met Adin at South Junior High in St. Cloud. They went to high school and college together. They played a game of pickup basketball just a few weeks ago.
He was a nice person. I mean, he's one of those people that when you go up to, you don't expect anything negative to come your way from him, you know? He was fun. He was a good basketball player.
It was the same among Adin's friends who spoke to NPR News. Many didn't want to be named. They said he was quiet, kind, and never one for confrontation. They couldn't understand what might provoke him to violence. Raha Omar looked up to Adin. He was friends with her older brother. She knew his sisters.
Sweetest guy you'd know. Always stood up for people. I've never seen him do anything wrong in general. He's a straight-A student, very smart. He was very kind. So hearing this is very crazy.
While his friends try to reconcile the stabbings in the mall with the Adin they knew, the FBI has moved its investigation to its Joint Terrorism Task Force. With reporting from John Collins and Martin Moylan, I'm Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Cloud.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you again here next week.